Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Wench Bench, where friends sit and talk about fabulous fictional females and how their stories have influenced us throughout our lives. My name is Allison.
And my name is Fonda.
Today, Fonda is going to be talking about Amy Pond from Doctor Who.
Yes, I am. So have you seen Doctor Who, Allison?
I have, and I have watched that whole section. I stopped after it switched to Peter Capaldi.
Okay, that's where I couldn't remember how far you got.
Yes.
Because I also stopped at like episode 3 with Peter Capaldi.
Yeah. I really want to watch again now though, because it's a lady doctor, but.
Yeah, I want to pick it back up. I think it was just like different because he was a very different doctor. And I think because I was so used to one Matt Smith's doctor.
Yeah.
That when he switched, I was just like, he seems aggressive a little bit. Maybe he changes. I'm not sure. Because again, I stopped at the second episode because I'm just like, I don't know.
Yeah. I didn't mind him as a doctor. I wasn't a fan of Clara. And I found that she stuck around like a really long time. And I enjoy the switching of the companions and kind of mixing it up a little bit. And I found their like dynamic wasn't like a romance dynamic, but it also wasn't like just a friend dynamic. And so I just found it really hard to connect with the Clara of it all.
That's fair. Before I get into like my feelings on all the other female characters and companions in the show, I do want to quickly tell you like the basic and our listeners, the basic information of Amelia Pond.
Yay.
Ooh. So you might be like, Amelia Pond? I thought Allison just introduced and said Amy Pond. Her real name is Amelia Pond and she just goes by Amy. She is played by Karen Gillan. Most people know Karen Gillan, I believe, since she started playing Nebula in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yes.
I think other nerdy fans that were into Doctor Who would have known her from other stuff. But I think, like, if people were to say, oh, like, I like Karen Gillan, they're most likely, I think, going to assume Nebula.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, not everyone watches British television, but a lot of people watch movies around the world, and Marvel's a big one, so there's that.
Yes.
Amy Pond debuted in 2010 in the episode The 11th Hour. Oh my God. That was 10 years ago.
Oh.
When I think about it, because it was also in April that the new season aired.
Oh, gosh.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just realizing.
I feel old now.
I know I'm not old. I know we're not old, but I feel old.
Yep. I feel very old right now.
So Amy is a companion to the 11th Doctor, played by Matt Smith, who I really like Matt Smith a lot. He's in The Crown. I don't know if he's been in anything else that I think a lot of people watch or have seen on Netflix.
I think he's actually in a new movie. I don't know if it's out yet or not, but it's about not Marilyn Manson, Charles Manson, and like the Manson women. And apparently he does a really good job, and I want to see that movie super bad.
We're all gonna have to wait for new movies, I think.
Yeah,
because, we should probably mention, and I'm just talking about the basics, so it's totally okay to side tangent.
Yeah.
As we're recording this, it is April 11th, 2020, and the coronavirus is a big thing. I don't want to downplay it. I don't want to overplay it. I'm just going to mention that we're recording very differently.
Yes, that's probably actually a good thing to mention. This is our first time recording in two different places, so that's fun.
Yeah, but like the McElroys do it. You know, like that's how they do Mabim Bam and The Adventure Zone. I feel like tons of other podcasters do it.
Yeah.
It's just that we were very lucky that we could just meet face to face, and now we can't. So the setups are a little janky.
A little bit.
But, Yeah, so if you hear a difference in audio, it's because I'm not as good as audio stuff, so I have to, like, figure it out on my end. But I trust in Allison for post-editing and production, so.
Yeah, edit it all together. Make it sound like we are in the same room, maybe.
Yeah, that'd be good. Just input Dutch, and it'll sound like it's normal.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, back to the basics about Amy Pond.
Okay.
So the doctor first meets Amy when she is 7 years old, who's betrayed by Caitlin Blackwood. And disturbed by a crack in her wall, he promises to return to the lonely girl in 5 minutes and take her with him in the TARDIS. But he accidentally arrives 12 years later, by which time adult Amy has become skeptical about her quote-unquote imaginary friend. However, she eventually decides to travel with him, and the duo are later joined by her fiancé, Rory Williams, played by Arthur Darvill.
Rory!
I know! I love Rory so much! I'll talk... Maybe one day we can talk about Rory. So, every companion kind of has, like, an era title.
Okay.
Like, we know about the Bad Wolf.
Yes.
Right? Rose.
Yeah.
Amy was specifically titled The Girl Who Waited.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, that's her, like, era for her companion. So Amy is unique among other companions in having had so much happen to her. More than anyone else, when you think about, not to say that the other companions didn't go through a lot of shit, but I think Amy went through a lot given her situation that the other companions didn't go through.
Yeah, a lot of extra weird time stuff, I feel like. A lot of the other ones just had, like, relatively normal adventures with the doctor, whereas hers was a lot of time skipping and jumping around and weird.
Yeah, lost and a lot of stuff. Shit happened to her specifically.
Yeah.
Which we'll get to in a little bit because, you know, we have seen her in the show develop and change. She is also a companion of many firsts, one being she's the first to have known the doctor as a child, even if it was for a small period of time.
Oh, cool.
She was the first to actually jump him rather than, like, simply admire him from a star. Like,
yeah, like, really took control and jumped them bones.
Yeah. Hard. She was the first to be seen happily married, because Donna didn't marry, right?
Except for, like, in her weird, I think it was in, the, like, the library or whatever, when she was in her other world in the library and she had her husband.
Yeah, that was, oh, Donna. Okay.
We'll get into Donna on another date. There's too
she
much
is,
right now.
Oh, I know, there's so much. Amy is also the first of the companions to give birth to a murderous time lady.
Yay.
And she's absolutely the first companion to become the doctor's mother-in-law.
Yes.
Which some of you might be like, what the fuck? Like, who? What? A murderous time lady? What do you mean mother-in-law? I will get to that. But just want you to know, a lot of shit has happened to her that hasn't happened to other companions. Yeah,
a lot of time shit.
Oh, much time shit. So I have a wonderful quote that I would like to read from Daniel Martin. He did this really great article, which I'm going to link in our description notes, from The Guardian. The quote starts, "If there was a problem with Amy at first, it was that she seemed a rootless collection of personality traits, enunciated sentence peaks. Plenty of people found the portrayal annoying, but that was the story. Her parents had been sucked out of reality, we never got to see her at home, and that fairy tale flavor executive producer Stephen Moffat brought along made her less familiar than Rose Tyler. But as the story goes on, she has rounded as a character in the same way Gillian has toned down her delivery. Amy is now adored, and there are not many who can bury that much emotion about the kidnap and training as a weapon of their daughter."
Yep.
Yep. "All the doctor's companions are intended to humanize him, but Amy is the companion you would want to be friends with. She'll think little of risking her life battling monsters. Heck, she even loves it. But she'd also bawl you out for spilling her mate's pint." And as Amy has matured, so has Gillen's performance. Coming from the worlds of sketch shows and modeling, her timing, sass, and physical comedy were bang on. But she took time to convince herself with more emotional scenes. End quote. I think that was just like a really great way for me to now venture into the evolution of Amy Pond.
Yeah.
Because I'll agree, like, I think Amy Pond at the start was very overacted.
That's fair. Yeah.
And I don't necessarily mean that in a bad way. I think that's just like, that's how Karen Gillan maybe read her. And maybe that's how she was trying to play her. And as all these other events and stuff were happening, she, you know, matured. So obviously Karen was like, okay, like, these things are happening to her. I'm going to tone down her performance because she's maturing. She's not trying to be overly dramatic, or she's not trying to be really excessive with the emotions she's portraying.
I found it was really kind of reminded me, like, when she first started acting, is she was still very childlike. Like, only child, wants all the attention. And then as she matures and grows up while having other people in her life and realizing that she can't be like a kid anymore, I find that's kind of like, she does really grow up a lot, which is cool to watch.
Yeah. And I think that's too, like, when you think about it, like, her parents disappeared through the fabric of reality because of that, like, crack in her wall that was sucking things in.
Yeah.
And taking away the memories of her parents. Like, she was an only child. So many things were ripped away from her. So, like, it makes sense that she acted in such a manner.
Mm-hmm.
Until she actually had, like, other people in her life that, you know, helped her with experiences to make her grow.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, ugh, my heart. All right. So let me get into the evolution of dear old, wonderful Amy Pond. So from her introduction in Stephen Moffat's The 11th Hour, which aired back in April 2010, until the sixth series of the show, Amy Pond has been much more than the supposed eye candy that I believe many people and fans unfairly referred to her as at the beginning of the series.
Yeah.
She, like, yes, she's gorgeous, and she, you know, when you first meet her, she's a kissogram. Like, that's her job.
Yeah,
like,
she's wearing a sexy cop uniform.
Yeah, so I get that when you are first introduced to her, she appears to be an eye candy in terms of, like, the body image and the way that she portrays herself. She definitely knows she's sexy and attractive.
Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's not. And I never viewed it as it was coming from a male gaze or a male lens either.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the great thing about Karen Gillan is Karen Gillan came from, like, modeling and comedy shows. So, like, I think she knew how to assert herself physically and play a person who's like, I know that I am attractive. I'm going to be confident in myself, not because of you. Not because of the doctor, not because of, like, even Rory Williams, but because of, like, herself and her own agency. So I really liked that.
Yeah.
But I believe that she's far more three-dimensional and developed than I think any pre-existing judgments made her out to be. And I think you could see that if you, like, watched the whole show.
Yeah. And you can say that about, like, a lot of characters, is that we tend to jump the gun a lot when it comes to judging characters at first glance, or, like, after a trailer, and we're like, oh, like, this is terrible. It's like, well, you really have to watch the whole performance to get the whole thing in order to make those kinds of judgments.
Especially because there is something to be said where sometimes writers, directors, anyone that's developing any kind of media where there's characters involved, I feel like they use stereotypes sometimes to their advantage in trailers or, like, snippets before the entire show, movie, or book comes out, where we might think one character is going to be portrayed stereotypically,
mm-hmm,
based off of the bit of information we're receiving. And then we can be pleasantly surprised when it's totally the opposite.
Yeah.
Never judge a book by its cover.
Nope. Nope, 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 nope.
So there was an article from 2011 written by Chris Hayden from the Den of Geek, who made a great point in regards to Amy and basically sums up thoughts and views I have in regards to the character that is Amy Pond. So the quote starts with him saying, "Since she became a companion and held her own in the dangerous worlds she faces, Amy's image is something for fans to cherish, particularly young women. There are few strong female characters in British television today." Again, he wrote this in 2011. Mm-hmm. "But Amy Pond is something of a sci-fi role model to many. She's feisty, yet heartful, bold, but thoughtful, and she appreciates everything she has. Although the media quibbled over her sexual dress sense of short skirts and the police uniform, Amy's sexuality is not exploited. It's true that many men find her desirable, but her presence in the show is not for her looks, but for her as a character. In a world where reality television rules and underweight women are captured for their supposed beauty, it gives one great pleasure to know that there is still something out there to give hope to those who seek it, especially those who envision themselves like Amy."
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I think that's a bit of a misconception about the miniskirts. Because, yes, she does wear miniskirts, but Karen Gillan also has legs for days.
Oh, yeah.
Ridiculously long legs. So even though it's like, oh, well, she's wearing a mini skirt, it's like, that could just be like an average length skirt.
Skirt. And
you put it on Karen Gillan and it's like, oh my God.
Right? Like, but if for any lady who is a busty, ooh, anyone who has a busty chest, you'll know that sometimes a shirt can look really well covered and conservative for someone else who maybe has a smaller chest, but for someone who has a bigger chest, suddenly it's like, bam.
Yeah.
The tits are out there in a shirt that on a first glance, you'd be like, oh, this is like gonna be nice. And then you wear it and you're like, oh no, I need to wear it like buttoned up all the way, or I need to wear like another shirt underneath it. So totally, I get what you're saying. It could be a normal skirt for her.
Yeah.
But also she would wear tights under her skirt. So yeah, like, she was a fashionable woman, she and was. I can't fault her for that at all.
No, she had great style.
Yeah, and the one thing I do like about Doctor Who is, like, all of the female companions, I don't know recently past Clara, but they all have been of varying different body types, mm-hmm, images, and, like, Donna, totally different from Rose. Rose, totally different from Amy. Clara's different.
Martha, like Martha's, yeah, awesome.
All of the female doctors or any of the female characters that are in the show for a long period of time, I think they do a good job of hiring actors and actresses for their capabilities, not necessarily because they look hot.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate that when it comes to Amy. So Amy Pond was a part of the Doctor Who TV series from April 2011 until September 2012. So a little bit over a year. And throughout the series, Amy's character arc has been one of my personal favorites from the show. Not just because Matt Smith's Doctor, the 11th Doctor, was like my first Doctor and introduction to the series, but because I found her complex.
Yeah.
And not because she was like quote unquote perfect. Some people like are like in love with her because I think she's like a really fantastic, wonderful character, but she's like very complex. She has agency. She has flaws that are very visible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think most people can agree she didn't really treat Rory well in some situations.
No.
There were a lot of times when like you were like, Amy, why are you doing this to Rory? Like, he's there for her. But, you know, like, she had to fail and she had to make mistakes, I think, to be where she was at the end of the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think those flaws and those issues were important.
Mm-hmm.
Because it made her feel like an actual human being.
Yeah. Flaws.
Flaws. We love a good flaw. Especially when there's more than one. So like I said, she's complex. And I mean, rightfully so, with how she was brought up, having no parents because of the crack in space and time, erasing things from her life and her memory, but also because her life while she was a companion was insane. Mm-hmm. She was kidnapped when she was pregnant, and her baby was stolen by Madame Kavarian to become a weapon of the silence in their crusade against the Doctor, which also left her, well, let's just say this anger and hate from, like, her child being kidnapped and raised to being a tool against the Doctor was, like, her hate was rightfully so.
Yeah.
But made for some very interesting character moments in the series where she made decisions that she knew the Doctor would frown upon, but she did them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think added a lot of complexity to her and her relationship with the Doctor.
Yeah.
Like, there's that one part where Madame Kavarian, she has this, like, eye patch, and you realize the eye patch is gonna, like, detonate or something, and Madame Kavarian says something, she's like, you wouldn't do this for your lovely Doctor, or you love the Doctor so much. And Amy's like, the Doctor's not here. And she puts the eye patch back on her eye, and that, like, signifies she's, like, is killing her.
Yeah.
Which I was like, oh, shit. Oh, shit. So that was, like, I think a moment where I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Amy is not just doing things for the Doctor, and she, like, did things beforehand, but, like, I think there were a lot of other companions who, even though they had their own agency, I think many of them kind of tried to please the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that Amy at one point went from, like, wanting to have her imaginary friend around to realizing that, like, they're friends.
Yeah.
And they both have to make their own choices in the world.
Yeah.
So I like that. And well, I haven't watched past Series 8, Episode 2 with Peter Capaldi, I can't speak for the other companions that are in the show from Clara onwards. And I've only seen from the show with 9th to the 12th Doctor. Because technically, even though everyone calls Matt Smith the 11th Doctor, he's technically the 12th Doctor.
Yeah, so he's the last Doctor.
which we find out in the movie. And I know many are going to dislike me for stating this, but I personally believe that Amy Pond is one of the best companions from the series, and I would like to list my 5 reasons why. I have 5. I have just 5.
Okay.
Try to make it short and sweet. I'll start from number 5 and work my way to 1.
Okay.
So she was the pal that the Doctor needed, and what I mean by that is, like, she was being both a comforting shoulder for him to cry on, even though he didn't really, like, cry on. But he was there, like, emotionally. But he was also a buddy when he just wanted to have a fun time.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't challenge him to great extents, per se, but she was level-headed enough to turn the Doctor down when she knew he was wrong.
Yeah.
So, love that. Before the Doctor met Amy, he had spent years on his own trying to forget he'd ever traveled with anyone. The 10th Doctor admitted he didn't want companions anymore because he felt they broke his heart when they left. But the 11th Doctor instantly took to Amy when she was a child. Like, instantly. He wanted to help her, save her. He had fish finger chips with custard. The grossest. Like, I tried it. It was so gross. Blech. And she read him straight away, too, like, claiming that he wanted to take her along because he was lonely. And as soon as they began their travels, the Doctor regained his love for adventure, and he opened himself up once again to accept new friends.
Mm-hmm.
And in case you haven't noticed based on me talking, the Doctor tends to get involved with companions once a new generation is in place, like, even forcing himself not to think about them again.
Yeah.
Like, as the 11th Doctor, he never brought up any of his past Doctors. Like, if you've watched the show, there might be, like, Easter eggs or hints where we as the watchers, the listeners, and quote-unquote readers would know.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, none of his companions had any really idea about the companions before.
Yeah. Yeah. There's been a couple episodes where they do, like, all together. I think it's a David Tennant one where they get, like, all of them and they all have to fly the TARDIS together because they're not supposed to be flown alone, and that's why it's so hard to fly it.
Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking.
Oh, I bet. Well, besides that one.
Yeah.
Amy is technically one of the companions whose name has popped up after she leaves.
Yeah.
The first instance happened immediately after he turned into the 12th Doctor, wishing he had Amy as his companion after Clara wasn't proving up to the task at the beginning. He thought of Amy again in the diner he'd been with her before. And finally, when he was about to regenerate into the 13th Doctor, the remarkable fact to consider is how these events happened over 1,000 years after he last saw her. Like, he was still thinking about her.
Yeah.
Which, like, really, really broke me.
Yeah.
Because the way she left,
ugh.
I'll get there. But, oh, boy. So my second one, before we get to number one, is, do you remember when I said Amy's companion era was called The Girl Who Waited?
Yes.
Okay. Almost every companion has had a moniker that they identify with, but Amy's one that displays a great virtue. Even though one would think traveling on the TARDIS would make a person impatient, Amy was someone who had the talent of patience. Mm-hmm. Even though she was very feisty, and I think at first glance you wouldn't think she was a patient person. This was, in my opinion, most evident when we saw the older Amy spend decades on her own. Yet she still retained her sanity, and she was still selfless enough to let her younger self escape with Rory, because she knew that the TARDIS wouldn't have been able to hold two versions of Amy.
Yeah.
And, like, Rory wanted it to happen anyways, but older Amy didn't.
Yeah.
And so even though she had a belief in the Doctor for the years, at a time when everyone had told her he'd just been a figment of her imagination, it showed how she truly deserved this title, because not only did she wait for a Doctor that she thought was never going to show, she waited for everyone to come back to her. And when they did, she realized she couldn't let her younger self do it, because the cycle would continue. So she waited, even though she knew she was going to die. And, like, it's just, like,
that whole, like, arc is ridiculously sad, because I don't know. I guess we should probably quick little recap on that arc. They go to, like, a time hospital where if you have somebody who's dying, they can go into one room. And that is on, like, a different speed than the rest. So you can, like, watch your family grow old while not, like, before you die. So if you're gonna, like, die in 2 years or whatever, you can go into, like, the slow timeline, and your family can come back and visit you and stuff. And so she got stuck in the fast one while the Doctor and Rory were in, like, the normal one, and it was a gut punch, to say the least.
Especially because, like, in that timeline, seeing older Amy, she was a badass.
So cool.
It was so cool. And, like, it showed her not necessarily needing anyone to survive. And I think that's a strong part of Amy, is even though she has probably been lonely her entire life with how she grew up and the events that happened, like, she never got to raise her daughter. And so that must have been, like, a whole thing. Like, you have to be a strong person, I think, to have gone what she did through in that specific episode at the hospital, because she was alone for, like, 30 plus years.
Yeah.
And, like, she still had sanity.
And shit everywhere.
Yeah. And she was a good person, be it maybe a little bit more harsher and
a little more jaded.
but she was still a good person. And so, okay, my last point, for five reasons why I think she's the best. Number one, easily among the most tear-jerking scenes ever on Doctor Who for me is in the Angels Take Manhattan episode. We saw Amy's farewell play out through the foreword that she left in her book for the Doctor, rather than have any resentment for him being the reason she and Rory were trapped in the past. Amy's last words that were written with the Doctor's best interest in heart. Like, the part in the episode, for no one that's watched it, so in the Angels Take Manhattan, basically any statue in Manhattan is suddenly an angel. Like, the Statue of Liberty is quote-unquote an angel, which are these
I think they're like an alien. They're a type of alien.
Yeah, and when you look at them, they stop moving.
Yes.
But if you look away, they suddenly move, which is, like, really creepy. Don't blink, which is really creepy for people that hate statues. But they live off of people's time.
Yes. So they send you back in time. And then that time that you were supposed to be in your normal timeline leaves an energy that they feed off of.
Yeah. So they don't technically kill you.
No.
But they like fuck up timelines a lot.
Yay.
So one of them does that to Rory. And they're periodically doing it to Rory. And so Amy, of course, is upset. The doctor's there. And so is River Song. And for anyone that doesn't know, River Song is Amy and Rory's daughter.
It's complicated. Which is
very weird and confusing, because when you meet River Song, you meet her with the 10th Doctor, and she knows all this shit about the Doctor. Mm-hmm. And I find very interesting, because I think if I was to watch the show again, knowing that River Song is Amy and Rory's daughter, I think I would pick up on maybe weird ways they interact.
It's good. I have watched a decent amount of it. Yeah, it's very interesting to know as you go back and watch.
Oh, it's, I bet. Cool. But anyway, so basically they live on the TARDIS and they're doing this trip, and River Song is there, which by this point they know is their daughter. But Rory gets taken away, and they go through this entire thing to save Rory, bring everyone back so they can escape Manhattan. Like, they need to, they can't ever go back to Manhattan. Yeah. Because otherwise something bad's going to happen to the like fabric of time.
Time loop or whatever.
Yeah. Like they can't go back. And so they go through this like entire arc of shit and like trying to deal with it. And like finally, when you think everything's okay, they get back. They're like, let's all head get on the TARDIS. Amy turns around and sees that one of the angels had followed them and touches Rory's shoulder, taking him back God knows where. And Amy is staring at the statue, and she's crying. She's not even looking at the doctor, because if she knows she looks away, then, like, she won't get to finish saying what she wants to say, basically, right? And, like, she tells the doctor she has to go back because it's for Rory, but the doctor's trying to convince her not to do it.
Yep.
At all. And then all of a sudden Amy is like, River, you be a good girl and take care of the doctor. And then River's like, I will. And the doctor just sobs as Amy quickly turns around, says goodbye, and the statue of an angel touches Amy, and she's taken to the past. And he can't save them again. Like, he can't, and he knows it. And you just see Matt Smith sobbing. He's like on his knees crying as River Song is taking him into the TARDIS because they have to leave. And then that's when he ends up finding that expert, because at the start of the book, Amy's reading a book and the doctor rips out the last page because he doesn't like endings.
Yeah.
And so Amy writes him like this really well-written excerpt at the end where she could have told him about the many struggles she had to survive in the past. But all she did was assure the doctor that she still loved him, because she knew that the doctor was going to get that book. So in the past, in order to give like a final goodbye, she had purchased that book and like knew River Song was going to get it. And she wrote an expert on the last page that she knew he was going to rip away. And so she like assured the doctor that she still loved him and to relieve himself, like to relieve himself of any guilt that he had. And after all the pain that she endured, Amy learned to live with no regrets in the past, a lesson that she wisely passed on to the doctor in the episode. And it just like, oh,
it's so it was good.
The worst way for two companions I love to have left.
Yeah.
But it was also the best way.
Yeah.
Because it was really, I think at that point showed not only where Amy was as a companion, but also where Amy was as a individual character.
Yeah.
Who didn't want to make the doctor be upset, who didn't want to make the doctor feel guilty or anything, because, like, that was a decision she made.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, like, yeah, she got taken to the past and probably had to find a new name, and they had to figure out all this shit. Like, they still lived a life where they grew old together, and they ended up having a son.
know.
Which wasn't in the show. It was a scene that got cut out, but
yeah,
their son, who grew older, ended up visiting Rory's dad.
Oh.
And he went and he knocked on the door and he was like, he handed him something because like the dad didn't know. Like the dad knew about the doctor and like yeah. he kind of knew that they were leaving all these times. But like he didn't know that why they were gone for so long, thinking they could just come back. So when like they never came back, Amy and Rory's like son that grew up old went to see him. And it was just like, oh, I wanted that to be in the show because I think that would have been really good.
That was really good.
Yeah. I really love Amy a lot. She is spunky. She, I think, has a lot of agency. Yeah, she has flaws. Like, at one point, she starts, like, kissing and making out with the doctor. And there's a lot of times where she kind of, like, ignores Rory. Like, at one point in the series, her and Rory technically get a divorce. Yeah. And she pursues her modeling career, but you find out why. Like, there's a bunch of shit happening between the both of them, and even though she loved Rory, because like her family being gone since the crack in space and time, you know, she never really got to develop a lot of the things I think she would have pursued. And also the whole issue with like their daughter being kidnapped, her not knowing she was pregnant.
Yeah.
Because technically in that part of the show, when she was pregnant, the version we saw of her in the TARDIS was called a doppelganger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, like, she didn't show being pregnant, but the doctor kind of, like, knew something was wrong, but they couldn't pinpoint it. And then we find out Amy was kidnapped during, like, the pregnancy period.
Yeah.
And, like, you think she goes to save her baby, but then as she's holding the baby, like, melts into ooze and was technically also a doppelganger, signifying that her daughter, River Song, was kidnapped. But then, like, River Song, like, tells her it's okay because, like, in the language for Gallifrey, they don't have a word for pond.
Yes.
And so, like, the only thing they had to pick up with was River, so she was called River Song. And you're just like, oh, so, like, she's gone through, I can't imagine going through that shit.
Well, for me, that's the beauty of Doctor Who. Like, no matter when you watch, I think that anybody who is a Doctor Who fan, we all have our doctors, and we all have our companions, and we all have those ones that were the ones that we really connected with the most. And having a story where you can follow, like, kind of the one character while still also getting all of these other storylines really allows everybody the opportunity to find their favorites and to find ones that they like. For example, mine is Donna Noble. She is 100% my favorite companion. And David Tennant is and always will be my doctor. He was the first one that I watched. And like Donna Noble, even though she wasn't the first companion that I got to know while watching the show, she was just so different. And like,
she was fun.
And so fun. But also she had so many cool storylines that we'll talk about in the future. But there's like the really quick one where they go to Pompeii and she finds out that she can stop the volcano, and the doctor has to explain to her why she can't. And it's,
yeah,
it's a really cool, like, she gets a lot of cool growth moments. And I think that's kind of the fun thing that you have when you deal with a time traveling storyline, is that you can really go and like have so much fun. And Amy Pond's story is 100% like the most confusing timeline stuff.
Oh yeah,
they just do so many crazy like jump around things, and it's
Moffat wild. Went wild with
yeah
with that. And I agree, like, I know so many people love Rose.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of people love Rose as a companion. She was the first companion, I think, technically, that had quote-unquote two doctors.
Yes, I think so. I'm not sure about like the old Doctor Who though, because I never watched.
Neither am I.
But I have watched all Christopher Eccleston as well.
Yeah, Rose was with 9th to 10th. She left partway through the 10th Doctor, and then the 10th Doctor had two companions, because David Tennant had a very long Ron as the doctor. And then it was Matt Smith. Oh my God, Matt Smith at the end when he's like, I don't want to go, and he has to change. And I'm like, I don't want you to go either.
Yeah. Time paradox. That's the word that I've been like trying to think of. But Amy Pond's story paradox. Is full of time paradoxes.
Yeah, it is.
Just like, oh, we can't go here because we were there, and we can't do this because this happened. And
yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah. And then like the Rory, the boy who waits, who loves the girl who waits. Because yeah. Rory at one point has to wait outside. I think it's a tomb or something.
Yeah,
for, it's a tomb. Like thousands of years waiting for Amy to come out. It's awesome. And he's so cute.
I know.
Because Rory can't die somehow.
Rory is like the best. The freaking best. I would love to talk about Rory one day for like a bonus episode.
Yeah.
Because he is so... I think if Rory wasn't there, I don't think Amy would be as good of a character as she is. Not to say that that a man is making her good, but Rory as a character, like ignoring the fact that he's the love interest, ignoring the fact that he is a man, how they use Rory as a character to be a foil, to be a compliment, really builds Amy, because he also, through being there, challenges her as well.
Yeah. He is just so good.
Yeah. I think some people at first are like, oh, they're just married because it's like they were childhood friends and this nerdy boy gets the hot girl model. But it's like, no, like there's a reason why Amy loves Rory. And there's a quote where she says it in the episode where they go to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, Rory is the most beautiful man I've ever met.
I know.
And she talks about him in a way where it's just like, it's him as a person. It's what he does. It's what he contributes. It's how he acts to other people, not just her, that makes him so beautiful. And she loves him for that. And I'm just like, there's a reason why she left to go be with him at the end. I love them so much.
They're just so cute. And
I know. Allison, I am so sorry for our listeners because I was probably like bouncing back and forth a bit. Again, the show itself is confusing.
Yeah, wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff.
Exactly. Like you actually have to commit to watch things in the order that they have to be watched in. Otherwise, it's so confusing.
Yeah.
And like, even though I think some seasons could be technically standalone, you wouldn't have to watch other seasons.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that come up that are explained in like previous episodes, like about certain villains and bad guys that like don't often get re-explained as well.
Yeah. And there's certain like one-off episodes or like one or two episode arcs that you can really watch and just have them be on their own. The very first episode I ever did watch was suggested to me by one of our friends. But I watched the episode Blink first, which is, the first time in the new series that you meet the Weeping Angels. And
fucking
it's creepy.
Hate the Weeping Angels.
Oh, it's creepy. It's David Tennant. There's a bunch of time stuff. And it really just gets you in the vibe of, like, what this show is about. And it's just, I found it to be, like, a really good starting point, but
it is a good standalone.
There's the one, I think it's a pair of stories with Amy Pond where they're on that like ship in space that's a city.
Oh yeah,
so that one's really cool, where they find a bunch of cities from Earth had to move to space, and they're all like on the back of basically like massive almost space whales.
Star whales. It's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good episode that shows Amy making decisions that technically the doctor wouldn't like either.
Oh, 100%.
Shows her to the fullest. Can I ask you what your favorite and least favorite moment of Amy Pond is? Because I know that Donna Noble is your favorite companion.
Yeah.
But what would you say your favorite and least favorite for Amelia Pond was?
For Amy Pond, I really liked the, I think it's a couple episode arc, but it's where they are with River and they go into the cavern of the Weeping Angels. And all of this, like, time energy is seeping around. And I really love, like, creepy sci-fi, like aliens, like that kind of stuff. Predator, like, I like that little bit of, like, creepy factor. And so I found that that episode, at one point, she ends up having, like, an angel inside of her. And so she can't open her eyes. And so she has to be, like, walking around with her eyes closed this whole time, which... is not good.
No.
And a lot of people die.
Oh yeah.
But it's a really cool episode with just like a lot of like action, and there's like space marines, and who doesn't love a good space marine?
I know. It's pretty good.
So that's probably my favorite episode. And then I think just my least favorite part about Amy was probably how she kind of mistreated Rory, and there's a couple times where it's like bordering on like cheating. I think when she like kisses the doctor on their wedding night, and I'm just like, Amy, stop it.
Yeah, Amy doesn't make good decisions all the time.
Like,
especially early on.
Yeah, like for me, because I am very much like a loyalty person. It's like, yeah, like you want your partner to be loyal to you. You want to trust your partner, especially with somebody who you know that they care about so much. And I find that Rory was really forgiving when it came to her relationship with the doctor, and really understanding that it was kind of like weird that way. But then to have her just like break that trust, and then like lots of that stuff, I was just like, stop.
Oh no, I feel you. Like, those are definitely like, I think one of her biggest flaws early on was her infatuation a little bit.
Yeah. But I found that they did a really good job in allowing you to not like her in those moments, but then also making you like her again in other moments. So they really played with those feelings that you have towards a character, and I found it really made her dynamic. So even though I hated it, I liked it too. But
I know what you mean. It made for her to be a stronger character later, kind of like more rewarding.
Yeah.
Because we're like, you grew as a person. you did better. Yeah. Yes.
I love character growth. It's so good.
I think sometimes, and I'm at fault for this too, it's easy to like, even though you can see good character growth, if a character does a lot of things that you as an individual deem really, really shitty and really, really bad, it can be hard to like them.
Yeah.
Even when they show that they're trying to make a change and they're trying to be better. Because for us as like the fans, the people who are watching it, we don't necessarily see them as people all the time.
Yeah.
We see them as the fictional characters. So it's like, if you have a good character suddenly making like way too many bad decisions, some people will ignore it a little bit too much and not see that maybe the point of this particular character's arc is to digress, is to go from like this quote unquote ideal good character who suddenly is, yeah, they maybe had a trickle of bad luck or maybe something really upsetting happened in their life, but they're continuing to choose to still make bad decisions. I think some people tend to ignore. And then on the other side, where you start out with like a really, really bad character, some people will choose to still dislike them.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, whatever. It is a show at the end of the day. It doesn't really matter. But I think something should be said about the fact that like, if we could treat these well-written characters as though they kind of are people, then we should kind of forgive them, or even not forgive, but acknowledge that they made really shitty mistakes in the past, but also acknowledge they're trying to be better. So we should focus on what they're trying to do now instead of what they did in the past that they can't change.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a great way to like generally treat human beings.
All boils down into characters being well-written human beings.
At the end of the day.
That's all that we want.
Yeah, and like, I find that there's sometimes showrunners and writers that I feel pander a little bit too much to the audience. Yeah. Like, I enjoy it when you can tell that the creators have a vision and a storyline, and they're going to keep doing that. And it's like, we may not like where it goes, but that's kind of your problem.
Yeah. Like, we don't have to like shit.
No.
Like, we can stop watching stuff at any time, which is going to lead me to a tiny tangent, but I really dislike it when there's so many people that are like, bah, 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 this sucks, or bah, 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 bah. Like, they're really hating on it.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking in my head, why are you still watching it then?
Yeah. And, well, creators have a right to create what they want to create just as much as we have a right to like or dislike things. For example, my husband and I were talking about the new James Bond being changed to a woman.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of cool, but also when I watch James Bond, I want to watch a sexy British guy fight bad guys as a spy. Like, that's literally what I'm watching James Bond for.
For you
and
personally.
So for me personally, that is what I'm watching it for. And I think that there were a lot of people online who feel that same way, but then come at it from the wrong direction. It's like, oh, well, it can't be a woman. It's like, well, to an extent, the people who are upset about it, many of them probably feel the same way I do, that they're just like, well, that's not what I want to watch it for. It's like, I'll still watch the new James Bond movie. Fuck yeah. Like, and who knows? I might watch it. And I might love this new woman as James Bond. I might think it's great. But also, like, feeling like a little bit hurt by that, but that's also my own feelings. Like, if the creators want to make her into a woman and go with it that way, it might be awesome when it comes out, it might not, but it's not my fucking decision.
Like with, yeah, kind of like with Thor.
Exactly. Yeah,
I know you and I were both really excited about it.
Yeah,
when we found out that there was going to be quote-unquote Lady Thor, who's just known as Thor. Mm-hmm. Like, that was something I think many people were excited about, but then there were also many people who were either just being jerks about it to be jerks, and then there were probably also people who, like you, were like, oh, well, I kind of just really liked seeing this buff Norse god dude. But that's fine. Like, I'll still consume it, and maybe I'll really like it, or maybe I still won't. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's okay to not like things as long as you're not a fucking asshole about it.
And we're also so fortunate because we live in a world where there's, like, so much stuff. Like, there's so many TV shows. There's so much everything. And then there's
remakes are abundant.
There's yeah. remakes and there's stuff everywhere. But also those things may lead people to the old stuff too, right? Like, other people might not have been reading Odin's Son Thor comics, but now after reading the other Thor, they watch this. Like, I really liked, like, David Tennant Doctor Who, and then I liked Matt Smith, and then I was like, you know what, I'm going to go back and watch Christopher Eccleston. And so it's kind of translates to bring it back around in that circle.
Yeah.
To Doctor Who.
To bring it back.
We may not like every single one of the companions. We may not like every single one of the doctors. But if you like that kind of core idea, it'll bring you back to that fandom. And then you can always go back and watch the old stuff again and, like, enjoy it and just love it for, like, what it was at that time.
And yeah.
I think that's a really a sign of a good, well-made TV show, when you can have people that connect with it so much that they will go back and just keep rewatching it over and over again.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder for myself, if I'm to let's say I'm 40 and I rewatch it, I'm curious if I would suddenly have a connection with a different companion instead of just Amy. Because, like, the reason I'm talking about Amy is because I loved her so much when I first got into the show. And, like, because I started watching with her, like, Matt Smith and Karen Gillan were my first introduction, and I thought they were a great introduction. And some of the things that Amy was going through, I wasn't, but I still just found her so cool. And I'm like, oh, she's making, like, decisions I wouldn't make, but, like, I feel that what she's doing is valid, and I want to pursue her, pursue these things. And I think she's a good foil to this character. So I do wonder if I'm to rewatch it again, like, my feelings could change.
Mm-hmm. Like, the first time I watched the episodes with Rose, I was not a fan. But then after I went back and watched the Eccleston stuff, like, you kind of, I understood her more. And, like, she's still not my favorite of the companions, but, like, I understand her story more. And I found that I can enjoy it better after I kind of, like, got all the information I needed.
Yeah.
And we have a friend who loves Rose. Oh, yes. And is, like, obsessed with her. And so maybe one day we'll get her on to talk about Rose.
Yeah. Because she is a diehard Rose supporter.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And hardcore.
I think that's some of the best stuff, is when you get to hear people just completely, like, geek out over the things that they love.
Yeah, and I think that just goes back to, like, both of us acknowledge that we might not like Rose the most, but that isn't to say she's a bad character.
No. No, no. It's opinion. And
that's, yeah, all this podcast, that's all this shit is us providing our opinions, our viewpoints, and our take on these fictional female characters and why we personally really like them. Again, I said I think Amy's the best, but that's my fucking opinion. You don't have to agree with it. In fact, tell me why maybe you don't like her.
Yeah.
Tweet us. Tell me. Email me. Email me. Be like, I didn't like her because of XYZ, and maybe we can have a great discussion. I'm getting really heated about when people can't realize the difference between opinion and fact.
Yeah.
Because that's all a lot of these things that we talk about are. I gave some facts.
Yeah. And, well, opinion is so, like, it's conversational, right? Like, opinion is very much depending on who you are, the things that you went through, the lives that you had. Like, it's so personal. Mm-hmm. And if media doesn't affect you to a point where you're like, I have an opinion on this, I feel like you're doing media wrong.
That's true.
Yeah. Especially, like, sci-fi, because sci-fi is all about, like, introspective looks at what's going on in the actual world and, like, metaphor and all that stuff. Like, that is sci-fi.
Yeah, Doctor Who was very much about that.
Yeah, it's about exploring the human condition and...
Oh, fucking yeah. Decisions and shit that happen, and, like, the moral ambiguity. Like, when you said, when Donna in that one episode realized that she could stop the whole volcano exploding from Pompeii, but the doctor's like, but we can't.
Yeah.
But that would be good, but we can't. It's like, that would eat me up as a person. And I think Doctor Who's pretty good about those things. It's not a perfect sci-fi show. And I don't know what it's like now, because, again, I stopped watching episode 2 with Peter Capaldi. But it's...
Yeah, maybe now that I have all this time on my hands, I'll go see what's on Netflix.
I know. I'm consuming so many things.
Oh, yeah. I'm reading all my comics. I'm finally catching up on my comic stack.
I hope you find a wonderful new fictional character to talk about then.
Oh, I just finished off the one that actually came out a few years back with She-Hulk. And it was right after there was the Avengers team that I think was, like, all women. I think it was all women. But it was right around the time of Avengers versus X-Men, that whole series.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. In it, She-Hulk... Hulk, boy Hulk, dies.
There's a boy Hulk?
Well, male Hulk. Normal Hulk.
Oh, okay. Got it.
He dies. And She-Hulk almost dies. So she actually gets put in a coma, I think, by Thanos. Don't quote me on this.
Because you're just reading it.
Yeah. I had read, like, the part where she dies, like, way earlier, and then this is kind of the after effect of it, and she can't remain herself in her Hulk body anymore, which is kind of what she, that's kind of what she's known for, is for being She-Hulk all the time. Like, while she's a lawyer, while she's going about her normal life, she is, like, buff, jacked, green, awesome, killing it. And in this one, when she does turn into Hulk, she's, like, mostly gray with, like, splits of green all over her body. And she, like, has the normal thing that you think of when you think of Hulk, where there's not really a lot of, like, cognition there. So she's not smart anymore. She's kind of just, like, a big rage monster. Mm. And so it's her kind of coming to terms with, like, trauma and stuff, and it's actually a really interesting story. So I'll probably talk about She-Hulk one of these days.
Yeah, I feel like you just told me what it was you were excited about.
Pretty much. That was actually going to be my thing, was just reading more comics. So what I'm excited about is...
Great!
Taking advantage of this really weird... shitty time and getting things done, including things that I love, which is reading comics and crocheting a absolutely fucking hideous blanket for my dog.
I can't wait to see it. You'll have to share it on our social medias.
Oh, it's so bad, because I had bought a bunch of like animal smell resistant yarn, and then when I ran out, I went back to buy more, and the colors that I was using weren't there.
Oh!
And so, like, halfway through, I had to, like, change to completely different colors. It's so gross.
Hey, it's for a loving dog. I'm sure he won't care.
He's colorblind.
Yes!
So, that makes me feel a little bit better.
Just a little bit. But yeah, so listeners, that's why I love Amy Pond.
Yay.
And Allison just told you what she's excited about.
I did. It's a weird day. So thanks everybody for sticking with us. You can find us wherever podcasts can be found. Please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe if you haven't already. You can follow us on Tumblr, Twitter, and Instagram at WenchBenchPod. And if you want to reach out, you can send us an email at WenchBenchPod@gmail.com. All the art for the Wench Bench was designed by the wonderful Tessa Joyce Reakin. You can find her on Twitter at Wervile. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
You can't see, but I'm doing finger guns. Pew, pew, pew.
Pew, 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 pew.